Welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth. I'm a marathoner, coach, and answer seeker. When I first started running at the age of 29, I had so many questions and what felt like nowhere to turn to for answers. And now I'm here to answer all your running questions about anything that you might want to know. If you're a new runner or you've been doing this for a long time, there's always something more to learn about running. So let's get started. My guest this week is Dr. Owen Everard. Dr. Everard has quite the resume. He has a PhD in biomechanics. He is currently working as a physiotherapist, and he has run sub 14 minutes for the 5K and sub 4 minutes for the mile. He is also the current world and European over 35 3K champion. His background and professional experience makes him the perfect guest to talk about our subject today, which is how do we stay competitive as we age? How can we keep being as competitive as possible as we age? And everybody is going to have a different definition of what competitive means. For some people, it is going to be becoming the world and European over 35 3K champion. For some people, it's going to be winning their age group. For some people, it's going to be, can I still do the things I love to do? So everybody's journey is a little bit different. But how can we keep that fire stoked to stay as competitive as possible for as long as possible as we age? Dr. Owen Everard, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for having me. I'm really, really excited to be on this podcast.
So all my guests have to answer this question, and I love it because the answers are so diverse. How did you become a runner?
Yeah, so I would have started running very early, like maybe at like 10, 11. My mom would have brought me down to a local race. Funny enough, actually, there was an under 10s race, but we missed that. So my mom, undeterred, entered me into the under 12s girls race. That was next. So my brother always jokes that my first win was an under 12s girls race. And then would have done a lot of sports. My brother then, he was about a year and a half younger than me, he qualified to run for Ireland kind of like just unexpectedly, and then would have, like, we call it slagging here, like, you know, joking, and like, you know, he'd just come down in his Irish tracksuit, and then I was just like, okay, I need to get an Irish cap just to kind of shut him up. And yeah, that was like at 16, and then that's kind of started it, and I've been kind of running ever since.
Sibling rivalry fueled your fire to compete for your country.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So tell us a bit about the experience you had competing for Ireland and your speciality as a runner.
I think I could really split my time into two. So the first half, I was very good as like a promising junior. There were still really good highs, but I would have had a lot of, like, you know, anxiety and real nervousness before races, like couldn't sleep before races. And then I was training to try to qualify for the Olympics in 2012. And I had a blessing, which was that I actually had the worst year ever. I'd gone like full time running, you know, trying everything to be the best I could. And it just did not work out for me. Like, I just didn't run well the whole year. But it was a blessing, because a lot of times you can subconsciously fear, like, you know, what's happening. And that just allowed me to, like, experience what is the worst that can happen, you know, like that you constantly run poorly. You realize that that dream isn't going to happen, that I was running times when I should have been coming into my peak that I hadn't ran since I was like 16 and starting properly. So the second half then was just, it's a lot better. I kind of went and did a master's and gradually got back into running. And, you know, I've loved it since. I won, like, you know, 5 national titles, broke sub 4 minutes for the mile, sub 14 minutes for 5K, and sub 30 minutes for 10K. So, and more importantly than the times or the things, like, yes, you still get nervous. Yes, there's excitement and all, but just way more enjoy the experience.
That's interesting that you talk about the pre-race anxiety, and something I work through. We're going totally off topic before we even get started on our topic today. But, you know, one of the things
I'm
talk through,
for this.
Yeah, with a lot of my athletes is that, you know, when we talk, we kind of think about race planning and kind of talk about, you know, the worst that could happen is that it's often so much scarier in our heads, right? That the worst that could happen is that it's, you're going to suffer a little bit and not get the time that you want. And in the grand scheme of things, when and if, you know, when it happens to everybody at some point, you know, it takes
some of the pressure off because you realize the worst, quote unquote, did happen. And you're still here. You're still alive, right? We live to fight another day. And, the mind is such a powerful thing. And I think it's just really interesting. I think sometimes when we think about runners with your kind of athletic background and runners who are professional runners, that they must not feel that kind of race anxiety. They must, perform flawlessly all the time. And that's not true. We're all human.
Yeah. If anything, sometimes as an elite runner, you'd feel like, well, of course, the guy who's coming, mid pack in it, he can't be feeling nervous, but it's at every level, 100%, I think sometimes it can be most times it's a subconscious thing that, because it's undefined, it's there and it can kind of look for a lot of people that low level anxiety. I have people, patients or clients who, trying to break 4 hours for a marathon, you think, oh God, they can't be experiencing that much nervousness, but really wouldn't like to do the race. And I'd always tell them that really helped me afterwards. Cause as you said, if you have with 1500s, which I was doing then, you could be I ran maybe 10 races in a row. So that's 10 weeks of being disappointed. So after a while you're look, I can't sustain being gutted this often. But, and you realize that your family still loves you, your friends are still your friends, things nothing actually bad happens, although you just have to say, yeah, that race didn't go great. And as long as you are happy with it, everybody is okay. Sometimes we feel because you're upset, people are upset for you, but then we can perceive that they're upset with the performance. So the other thing that really helped me then with it was when I had kind of ran poorly that next year, I was look, I'm kind of retired now. So, but when I started getting back into running, and every time I got the nerves, I was like, well, if you want, you could just stop. You don't have to do this race. No one's expecting you anymore to run. And then you start thinking, okay, no, but I want to run. Why do you want to run? Well, I've trained hard for this. Yes, I'll be nervous. Everybody's nervous. I don't mind. And then the second thing I would say to people is, I still am quite controlled on what I eat and preparation for a race. But before, I've now ran so many races. I've ran good feeling good. I ran good feeling terrible. I've ran terrible feeling good. And I ran terrible feeling terrible. I've sleep, every kind of permutation. So I would, what works for me is not just if I'm tired and I don't seem to be that motivated, if I'm super excited or if I'm nervous, different races bring different experiences and just accepting that's how you feel. The only constant is if your training has gone well, and you can look back and honestly analyze it, you'll find that that's the correlation. And the mental strength and being positive, or it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And if you understand that, then you kind of get a little bit more relaxed about it, because I'm not worried about how I'm feeling before a race. I'm just this is how I'm feeling.
Yeah, I think it's a misconception that in order to perform at your best, you need to feel everything, wake up on race day morning and feel, oh, it's the perfect day and my mindset's 100%. That's not true. You can have really great performances and not feel awesome. But it's that prejudgment, right? That I feel badly, therefore I'm going to perform badly. It's like, well, you don't know that. Maybe you will now because you're expecting to, right? But you could have had a fantastic race if you just kind of set that to the side and say, this is how I feel today. I'm just going to go out and give it my best.
Yeah, I would even go a step further. Even with the most negative self-talk, I have had, honestly, days where I was I am not going to run well today. If you think about, if you've run bad for one whole season, the first race after I ran well, and I was every part of me said I was going to run terrible. And yet, because I was in better physical shape, I ran well. Or even now I have up and down races, but I always think there's something probably going on. Maybe I had a little bit of an infection. I never judge it. I did terribly in this race in Belfast in Ireland, which I thought I was going to run sub-8. I didn't panic. I was like, you know what? That can happen. Maybe I wasn't feeling great for a few days beforehand, sickness wise, or this can happen. Didn't panic. Next week I won two races back to back, So, it's just, that's the sport. Sometimes it goes well, sometimes it goes bad.
And that's the up and down. And I think so, having your experience in your career, experiencing multiple parts of the sport and having that experience to race a lot and have that kind of up and down for a lot of runners, especially once you start running later in life, they don't have that. They don't have that experience of that as many races, right? They typically focus on longer distance, right? So, you know, it's very hard for, I think, a lot of runners to accept that the natural ebb and flow of your performance is part of the process, that we can't expect every single week or every single race to just be better than the last one. You're going to have bad races. It doesn't mean you're heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah, 100%. And especially, we call it like the thin end of the wedge, especially when people come to it later. The problem can be, it's like, say if you started in your early 30s, like you're going to take huge chunks off time because you're just putting a structure in place. But you will get to a stage where all of a sudden, and that can be take a while for people to realize, it's like, no, you're actually at a quite good level now. So it's harder just to, like, you know, for a marathon, take 10, 15 minutes off a time. It could be that actually I felt the preparation went better than ever. I feel fitter, but the race didn't go as well. And it's like, you don't lose that preparation. It could be the next one you get a bigger jump. I think as well, perspective is massive. As I said, when that first half of my career, every workout was just guided towards, like, and I did run well, like guided towards, that makes me, I'm in this shape. I think the second half, still I like doing well and I've done better than I did previously, but much more like, it's amazing if you're 50 and you're able to run, you know, the vast majority of the population in the world can't run 1 7-minute mile. So I think sometimes just having the perspective of, isn't it great to be fit and healthy and I can go running, and, you know, most people would be huffing and puffing and couldn't do this, you know. I know you can't have that all the time, but just having that perspective allows then you to realize that the race is an exciting bonus. Even for me, for racing, I always feel now it's like, God, how many people my age, it's just their life is mundane. They never have that like nervousness, that like, I am putting something on the line. And like, as I said, if I wasn't doing it, nobody would care. So that even makes me a little bit more excited about it. And it's like, God, this is great. I love that Franklin Roosevelt's like kind of speech, you know, man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts. It's the man who's in the arena doing the action. And I always think that it's like, yeah, I'm out here trying, and that's the big thing. And I think people need to keep that perspective. It really helps them.
So today we're talking about how to stay competitive as you age. And this is going to be, I think, a conversation aimed at, to kind of depends on where you're starting from, right? What competitive means for the individual. And there are going to be some people, and I think we can talk about the kind of in two different groups. There are going to be people who were very competitive, like, you know, ranked competitive, were very, you know, ran in school, maybe were trying to become professional or, you know, join the elite ranks in their 20s, in their early 30s, and then are trying to extend their competitive performance as long as possible into their 30s or 40s. And then we have our second group of runners who started running later in life and maybe found they have a bit of an aptitude for it, but they started when they were 25 or 30 or 35 or 45 or 55. How can they then harness where they started and become as competitive as possible, understanding that they are going to be spending the majority of their career running as masters athletes? What do you typically see or you know, think of when you hear athletes and, you know, talk about staying competitive for as long as possible?
Yeah, I think there's two things there. I think for the elite, like the elite runner who's now trying to transition to being running as they age, look, there's probably no guarantee of success, but I guarantee one for no. There's one road to guarantee failure, and that is to keep trying to run as you did in your 20s. I've seen that so often. People just think, I used to be able to do these sessions. These were like good indicators of workouts I used to do. And then they keep trying to replicate that, and then they constantly break down. You have different strengths and weaknesses as you age. Your speed isn't going to be as good, but your aerobic strength is a lot better. Your physical strength is a lot better. Your power is less. So you're not the same athlete, and you kind of got to lean into those things. So, you know, when I was in my 20s, I didn't take a rest day. I did 3 workouts in a week. Now I always take a rest day. I only do 2 workouts in a week. The same if you're only getting into running, in your 30s or 40s or 50s, be careful of, like, one thing that's brilliant now is that, like, with Strava and everything else, we can see what people are doing. But just remember, even you could be looking at a 40-year-old and you're 40 and you're thinking, well, that person I want to beat is doing this, this, and this. It's like, yeah, but look, they might have 10 years of a background that allows them to do that type of work. You mightn't have that background. So you just have to be careful about who you're copying or what you're doing. Because I see it a lot with, like, Jakob Ingebrigtsen. He's brought a lot of brilliant ideas back. But there's a good saying, when the sage or the prophet points at the moon, all the idiot sees is the finger. And what that means is, like, we just get hyper in the detail of, you know, that's the exact session. Get the general idea of, like, aerobic as opposed to these type of sessions. So as we age, I think to stay competitive, it's important not to copy what you did in your 20s or not to copy what other people did, because that mightn't allow you to be there. I think you need additional rest, like at least 1 rest day to 2 rest days. I think 2 workouts in the week is massive. I think doing things off a lactic, like off lactic threshold and heart rate and minutes, so much more effective than offset times. When you were in your, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, unfortunately, not many of us are professional athletes, so we have to work. There are different stresses and strains that people have. And then I think lastly, and this, I do Pilates, so you can take this one with a pinch of salt, because I would recommend it. But I think doing something outside of running is so much more important, even if you need to cut the run to do it. You know, when I was in my 20s, I never did any Pilates or anything like that. And I got a bad hip problem then when I was in my early 30s. So it made me reevaluate.
I love that. I mean, right off the bat, you brought up the fact that the stuff that you did in your 20s, kind of no matter where you came from, whether you were running at the highest level or maybe just were in the gym a couple times a week, you can't do the stuff you did in your 20s that you know, as you age.
Yeah,
and I 100%. Think anybody who is over the age of 30 now looks back on their 20s and said, wow, I got away with some really stupid stuff. And
yes.
I felt okay. I could pull an all-nighter and
be day.
I could go to the gym 7 days a week and, like, still somehow be totally fine. And what it's interesting, you know, working with a very diverse population of athletes in my own coaching practice, I tend to find that there are some, and I fall into this trap too. I'm in my mid-30s, right, is that we sometimes forget that we're not in our 20s anymore.
100%.
And so we're holding ourselves to that same benchmark. And when you're in your 40s, 50s, or 60s and say, you have this memory, you don't feel your age, right? But
yeah,
your body is, unfortunately. So if you think, but what, I can handle this no problem. Well, maybe when you were 22, you know, but now we're 52. And if you try to do those same things, you might be okay for a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, but eventually it's going to catch up with you.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, sometimes we beat ourselves up because, as you said, you're comparing yourself. God, when I was younger, I was able to do these, like, speed work in these 200s in 32 or 33. And now I'm not hitting this. But you got to remember, your aerobic probably is a lot better than it was. Or, you know, or you just have different goals. So, yeah, it's so true. It's like, and I've seen it so often, people pushing, thinking they have the same body, because, you know, we age just day on day. And I still think sometimes I'm 19. But, you know, you look back and you're like, oh, yeah, no, you're actually getting older and you have and more stresses. You know, sometimes we ignore those other stresses in life. And it's all part of a package. You know, maybe when you were in college or earlier, you even had, like, you know, less kind of personal commitments. Work wasn't as serious and you had more time to recover. So it's all those things need to be taken into account.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So thinking about, you know, how to restructure training, obviously it sounds like a, I want to say total reduction in training load, because you might still do the same volume of overall training,
yeah,
but the way that you are distributing that training throughout the week might change. So maybe you might replace a running session with a cross training session, or you might be doing more low impact, or you might be doing more strength-based activity to support your running. Because it's interesting, there has been some recent research that looked at how to mitigate age-related declines in performance. And it does appear that to some degree, if we make sure that we are maintaining or maybe slightly increasing our overall training volume, we can prevent, I think, about 50% of the performance related or age based related declines that we face as we age. Now, it's not to say we can, you know, eliminate 100% of them, but there are different ways to stay as competitive as possible for as long as possible and making, I say, tweaks to how you approach your training.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, it's like anything, like strength as well. Like I was actually doing a podcast recently, and it's like, oh God, when you came to Masters, you won the world championships like straight away. And it's like, how did you do that? It's like, well, I never lowered my level. Like I adapted, but because I was there. So it's like anything, if you have it, it's so much easier to maintain than kind of build back up to that. And as you said, you do need to be careful, but like, still doing like effort wise, say strides. So it's like, it's not a thing of like, okay, remove the speed work. It's change it to effort. It's not a thing of remove the hard workouts. It's like, keep the workouts in, because as you said, even keeping the effort will allow you to maintain, you know, at least 50%. It's good to hear of that study, because it should give us all hope. Like, you know, I'm 37 now and I'm still having a great career. But I used to be a very explosive speed type athlete. Now I'm more strong. I'm kind of smoother of a runner, and my aerobic system's a lot better. So you just, as you said, you could just adapt to that, and it makes a big difference.
And I know I said kind of those two groups we're talking about, the athletes who've been competitive and are aging into a different age bracket. But then there are a ton of people who start running in their 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s and beyond. And I have a number of conversations with athletes who are coming to the sport. Let's say, you know, the typical profile of this athlete seems to be people who started running in their like late 30s or early 40s.
Yeah.
You know, they've been running for a couple years. They've got a couple races under their belt. Maybe they're training for their first, you know, competitive half marathon or going for their first marathon. And when I have conversations with them, it's always some form of, not everybody, but this is how the doubt, I guess, seems to come in. So they say, well, I know I'm older and I don't expect to be able to get any faster, but I would like to achieve this goal. And it's like, you've only been running for 2 years.
Exactly.
You think you're done? You think this is it?
Yeah, 100%. As you said, they're so, okay, like, they're like, oh, I'm getting older, I'm not going to be as fast. But it's like, you only have 2 years of athletic development. In fact, and sometimes, as you said, they might feel like, oh, well, that person was a really good runner when they're 25. But in fact, like, for a lot of people, it's, if you haven't ran competitively when you're younger, like, this isn't science-backed, but you kind of always feel like there's a certain amount of, like, say, good miles. That would have been the kind of colloquial thing we'd say. So there was a woman in Ireland, Anne Keenan Buckley, and she came like top 10 in the world championships at like 42. Senior, incredible, like. And Sonia O'Sullivan, who's, you know, our greatest athlete ever, you know, silver medal Olympics, world champion, she was trying to come back at like 40, and was asking then Anne, like, how did you do it? I'm trying to run the same. She's like, yeah, you got to remember when I was 25, I wasn't running at all. You know, when you were 25, you were doing 100 miles a week, you know, real intense workouts. So she kind of felt like, I have this freshness in my 40s that a lot of people only have in their, like, say, late 20s. So, yeah, I wouldn't think that even in your 50, it's like you haven't put a lot of, like, distance on the body, and there's so much more improvement there to go.
Something I want to talk about, and this is going to be, I think, more of a niche thing for some runners, but the concept of microcycles that are beyond the traditional 7-day plan. So kind of a crash course in training periodization. Your training is broken up into kind of phases of that contain other, like, it's like Russian nesting doll situations. You have a macrocycle made up of mesocycles, made up of microcycles, and your microcycle is like your shortest training, well, you have training units. But long story short, a microcycle is typically 7 days. And that's the your training week where you have your long run, you have your individual workouts. And for most people, their microcycles are 7 days because our weeks are 7 days long and your life falls on a 7-day rhythm. But for some runners, as we age, it might make more sense to extend that micro. And I know elite athletes do this too. This is not a new concept, right? But extending your microcycle length to something like 10 days. So you're getting the same stuff in your microcycle, but over a longer period of time.
And I promise you, Elizabeth didn't make me ask to say this, but I really feel that this is why, even if you're like, if you're doing the hard work of going out for a run, that's the hard thing. You're putting the time and effort into it. I would really recommend people to, like, think of getting a coach like Elizabeth, someone who can look at your schedule, because, like, no, and this is serious, because it just is that thing. Like, I have a friend here who coaches, and it's the same thing. The amount of times he has to put people on, their work, even not even the week might be different, but the work might have it that, well, they have, like, very intense weekends. So actually that 7 days doesn't suit. They might need two kind of rest days. And then every second Monday is a long run, and that works way better. And, like, you know, I've never seen anybody ever regret getting a coach. And a lot of times it's, they kind of don't feel worthy of a coach. They don't feel worthy of training, where if you're out there, you're putting in the same kind of time and effort, and I can guarantee you would get really good results. The thing with the microcycle is, yes, like, even for the marathon, I actually think everybody should be on a 2-week microcycle, because I feel thing that's missing a lot is the long run can be overemphasized. So I would think on week one of the microcycle, instead of trying to squash everything into 7 days, we'll go, in the microcycle, it'll include, say, one kind of 5K, 10K work, one long run to get the time on feet, one kind of like aerobic lactic threshold-y type session, and then it'll include one endurance long run, which will be a shorter run than the marathon run, but will include kind of marathon-paced effort. And in that way, they're kind of every 2 weeks getting everything they need. Whereas when people go on a 1-week schedule, that long run, because they're always trying to fit in the long run plus the workouts, it doesn't work as well. But yeah, they would be the 2 points. I think not just going on the 7 days, like talking to a coach, you will be surprised how much benefit you could get. Like my friend, I was literally just talking to him yesterday about this. He, a guy's on nights every second week, and he was just training the exact same. And he's like, no, we need to go easy 1 week, and we can load you, you know, looking at your schedule. Okay, I'll get a good rest that night, and then we can load the sessions, say, you know, 3 in the next week because you're fresher, and then maybe 1 on the week when you're on nights.
And that's tough too, because, you know, when you have runners who are looking at a traditionally available schedule, like let's say they bought the Jack Daniels book, you know, they're trying to figure out how to cram everything into their 1 week. And like you said, yeah, if we're getting faster stuff, more VO2 max style, then we're getting lactate threshold, and then we're getting kind of, you know, aerobic strength, moderate, you know, marathon work, and then we're getting our long, slow, it's like, well, yeah, of course, you're not going to be able to fit all of that in 7 days. And I think the trade-off is kind of like, kind of sidebar into structuring your training week, the trade-off for if somebody, you know, can't fit all of that work into 1 week, and most people can't, is that we actually have to like almost develop those systems in different blocks, like a true linear periodization, right? So it's like, well, now we're just doing like aerobic and speed, and then we're transitioning into aerobic and strength, and then we're transitioning into aerobic, you know, it's like, and it's not to say one is necessarily more or less effective than the other, depending on what structure you're following. Because I think for some runners, fitting that much different work into their training week, however long their training week is going to be too much depending on their level of comfort and, you know, how long they've been training for. But there are so many different ways to do this. And I think that that's where we get really caught up, and that people think there's one way to train for one, you know, if I have this goal, there's one way to train. It's like, oh my God, no, there are so many ways to train for this thing. And that's the cool part about approaching training in this way.
Yeah, like even if you look at 1500 meters, like Jakob Ingebrigtsen, it's like he literally is training like a half marathon runner. Like, I did 1500s all my life, and I never ever thought one time that anyone would train like he's training, and he's going to break a world record. So, you know, if you're talking at that elite level with that much kind of detail gone into it, that in the year 2023 and since kind of 2019, that someone can actually completely revolutionize the way. And the guy who bet him, Jake Whiteman, doesn't train like that at all, you know. So there is different ways. And as I said, especially with work and everything else, I can't recommend people just for themselves. Get a coach. Let someone see your program. Because you think, oh yeah, that's the schedule. And you're not factoring in all the other things. And sometimes, like say someone like Elizabeth, they'll see it from the outside eyes. And when they say to you, it's going to be the most obvious thing in the world, but until you see that external, it can be very difficult to imagine.
Let's talk a bit about how our body ages and some of the natural wear and tear we expect. Because you mentioned before about, you know, we lose some of that top end speed. We're not as elastic and explosive as we were when we're younger as we age. What are the things that a runner can expect of their body, broadly speaking, as we age?
Yeah, I think, as you said, it's that lack, you lose a little speed, that elasticity goes a little bit, that natural mobility that we have. You know, even there's a thing of like, you know, sarcopenia, which is a little bit of strength or muscle wastage. The great thing, as you said, is if we target these things, we can kind of maintain what we have, or we can kind of improve it over time. It's just that we need to be a lot more deliberate. We need to be putting in and prioritizing sessions that emphasize this in our week. You know, it's not good enough to be like, I've done another run and just accept that that's happening. Things that do improve is our aerobic performance can improve. We can get stronger because we mightn't have focused on that when we're younger. Like, I feel stronger even though, like, technically you're kind of petering out now. And you can maintain a lot of those good gains by, you know, doing yoga, doing Pilates, maybe maintaining a strength session, just to kind of counterbalance those tightnesses and weaknesses you can get with running.
Something that also, you know, as we age, we accumulate what I said, the normal wear and tear of life. And I think so often when we are running focused and we're chasing these goals, we forget that running might be one or two, maybe three total hours of our day. And all the other stuff that we do in our day counts. Like, if you have an office job and you're hunched over, or if you are in the car a lot, or if you do something else, you've picked up, you know, back pain or some sort of thing. Like, it's not necessarily caused by running, but it is something that's going on in your body. And if it's affecting your running, you need to figure out what that is.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, sometimes we have these like tickets that, like, you know, I always see it when people say, come to me with back pain or other things. They're like, you know, I was given this stretch by the physical therapist and I'm still in pain. And they're like gobsmacked. I'm like, you sit on your ass 10 hours a day. Like, and you thought this 30 second stretch was going to counteract that? It's like, come on. No. It's like, we got to get these muscles burning. There's a thing called like gluteal amnesia. Essentially, when I'm talking about waking muscles up, is we have these sedentary jobs that like areas will get naturally tight, you know, and like that, it's like, we do say stretches in our Pilates or moves, and it's like, oh, I'm so tight. Like, why would I be tight? And it's like, do you sit a lot? It's like, yeah, I drive an hour to work. I sit for 8 hours and drive home. And it's like, that could be it.
that would do it. Well, it's so funny.
Guess.
I noticed when COVID hit and, like, you know, everything, there was nothing to do. And so I was lucky where I live, I was lucky to still be able to run outside. But the rest of the day I was just on the couch or like on my desk. And I know after a couple of months I was like, something's going on, like my hips, like, you know. And I realized, I was like, what's changed? Nothing's changed. I'm actually running more, like I have more time to dedicate to my, you know, pre-run warm-up and blah blah blah. But the rest of the day I'm doing nothing. I am sitting in that same funny position that we all sit in when we're on the couch.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I was like, maybe that's related to this.
100%. Yeah. And it's like, as you said, it's like looking at all those factors. Like if it is back pain, if you have any, like if you wake up and your back is stiff, that could be potentially like a little bit of a disc bulge. And what you want to do there is like, you know, lying on your stomach, extending your arms and just arching the back, or power walk for like 5 minutes, swinging the arms in the morning, can just help reduce the amount of fluid in that disc, get it back to a normal, healthy level, and then all of a sudden you're kind of good for the day, you know?
Speaking of back pain, because I've had talked to a couple runners recently who've been experienced back pain, and like, look, I'm not a doctor, right? So this is like, you should go see a professional. But, you know, back pain of varying degrees, whether it presents on a run or in your daily life, is extraordinarily... it can be extraordinarily debilitating.
Yeah.
I know that obviously this is kind of general advice, and we're talking in not specifics and not medical advice here, but, you know, for runners who have back pain related to, like you said, disc issues or back pain that's maybe causing other issues or changing the way that they run, you know, what are the things, if somebody walked into your clinic and said, you know, I'm experiencing, and you can tell me what the most common thing that you typically see would be, I'm experiencing this symptom of back pain, you know, how would you go about assessing that specific runner?
Well, I have this quiz. It's called, you can do it for free. So it's at backawarebelt.com /quiz. So backawarebelt, just as it sounds, .com/quiz. And that's just a back quiz. So generally there's three things I see. One would be, like, as you said, disc related pain. How that usually presents is stiffness in the morning, pain either sitting or when you stand after sitting for a while, maybe some like sciatica into the bum or slight down the leg. If you ever get like sciatica or like a drop foot or pain below your knee, I would definitely get that checked out. That's serious. What you want to do with that is, couple of things with that. The morning is so important, as we said, because when you lie down at night, the discs take on additional fluid. Okay, so they increase in size. So it's like having a water bottle that's completely full. Now, if I bend or I do things, it's like, say if I didn't want to let water out, it's like, well, if it's completely full, I can't press on that at all. If we can kind of let some of the water out in a safe way, like reduce the size of the disc, now we can move and we have way more like margin for error. So lying on your stomach, extending your elbows, doing that like 10 times to kind of arch your back on the ground. As you said, power walking. If I put on my oatmeal, or we call it porridge here, and put on the microwave, I walk briskly, really swinging my arms from the shoulders, from the microwave to my front door, turn, and I'm doing that for like 2 minutes. That helps just reduce the viscosity in the disc. Power walking is great because as you move from your shoulder to your arm as well, it kind of just like supports the spine and kind of like just takes a lot of pressure off. So it's one I always recommend to people. The second issue you can get is a kind of like a right-sided or a left-sided back pain that kind of can go in towards the hip. And that's generally like more of an SI joint issue. Key with that then is like avoid like lunges or split squats and those kind of split positions. Again, if someone wants to, you can message me, everardpilates@gmail, everardpilates@gmail.com. If you have any like SI, I'll send you a video I have. It's generally just included in our Pilates group, but for anyone, any listeners here, I'll give it to them for free. You just get a massage ball. You want to release all the muscles around that pelvis, because what's happening is rather than it, the pelvis moving like that, it's slightly tilted, and then that kind of, it just has to grind. It's like if a door was slightly off its hinges. So we want to release all the muscles to allow them to kind of move to where they should be. And then we want to focus on like double leg squats, double leg bridges, get the core so that the pelvis then gets kind of more stable. They're probably the two main ones. If you have pain when you're running or walk. Generally, people have pain sometimes walking around the like shop more than I can get that sometimes when we're standing. A couple of key things you can do then is when you're walking, try power walk, swinging the arms again. It'll support, as opposed to, you know, if you're with someone, let them, you know, check the shops out and then try walk up and down to them quicker. You can reset it. Or place your hands on like a table. Let take all the pressure upper body and then let your legs drop. And then that can kind of just like cause a decompression in the spine. Or just try sit down to take that pressure off. And then at home, you want to do something like your Pilates. We have the back aware belt or back aware Pilates coming out, where you just learn how to like engage the core muscles to again take pressure off that spine.
That's fascinating. I know very little about the spine and the spinal column. I feel like I'm going to have to learn more about it after this, because, you know, again, thinking about as we age and that kind of how we feel mentally versus how we feel, how our body ages. For some people, you know, we're kind of going along and things are going great, and then something will happen that reminds us, oh yeah, I'm not 22 anymore. And yeah, that can be a big, but it can be very like demoralizing, kind of think it's all over, I'm done now. 100%. I'm going to take up, you know, some sort of non-running activity and fade off into my twilight years. But, you know, there are a lot of ways we can manage all of these conditions and still be able to train effectively.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's about having a management system in place. Like, you know, with the Everard Sports Pilates, I give like specific rehabs for each one, because look, while I can't analyze every member we have, like so often, like with runners, like you'll clean up 90% of the stuff if they're just doing these kind of key exercises, like they're 10 or 15 minutes that they might have for a knee pain, or here's a foam rolling for that. And a lot of times it's just having a management strategy. Like the back is, it's so badly managed a lot of times, but it's actually a really easy thing to work on. And it's just people, one, don't think about it in terms of what's going on. Is it a flexion or an extension issue? And then secondly, they're not giving people like a management strategy that if it gets sore, I do this, this, and this. And okay, I might be out for a week or it might be sore, but I know I can calm it back down. And then I get back into my running and I'm fine. You know, as you said, sometimes it's like if you don't know what to do, it can catastrophize it. And then we're stopped and we're out of the routine, which is a really shame.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about how to stay mentally competitive as our performance changes throughout the years. One of the things that I talk about with my runners when they, you know, I get questions about, when can I expect to start slowing down? Like, when will I hit my peak? And kind of, you know, I'm like, oh, like, we're already, you know, why are you expecting that? Like, do as well as you can for as long as you can, and you'll realize one day, oh, okay, maybe I'm no longer chasing my fastest ever times. But also that if the only intrinsic reward that you have tied to your running is related to always getting faster, you've put a shelf life on your running, because if you're expecting to just stop when you're no longer going to set PRs, like, I don't know a lot of runners who, like, that's you're missing the point, right? You're missing the point. So my
dropping
question is,
truth bombs there, yeah,
how have you, and how do you counsel other runners to continue to stoke the fire of competition and chasing the best we can be as we age, and the times are not necessarily going to be the fastest times we're going to run for the rest of our running career?
I think two things. I think the one thing that you said is so important is that, like, putting it in perspective, like, so okay, maybe if you're 55, you're not going to run as quickly as you did when you were like 35, but think about like how much fitter you are than other 55-year-olds. Think about what it's like to, you know, when it's just on a summer's day and you're out running. It's like we don't take that in enough, that like, oh my God, isn't it just great to be like healthy and fit or running with my friends here? And that perspective, as you said, you need to get that. Like, that's why I love that line, and I was smiling there, is like that intrinsic motivation. Like, as I said, I've been lucky enough. I've won a lot of titles and, you know, ran sub 4 minute miles and great things, and they were brilliant, but honestly, they don't like one thing, when you win these things, you realize there's not much behind it. Like, I honestly think one of the reasons why a lot of people can win consecutively or a lot of times is like they win and they realize, oh my God, is that all there is to it? Like, you know, so they don't, like when they're then against someone who really wants it, they're like, well, I don't care. You know, real deep down, they want to win. It's nice, but they have the perspective of it's not going to really change their life. So, and then I think secondly then, so the first is just getting that intrinsic motivation of like, think of all the good things that like, how amazing it is to be able to run like a 7 or an 8 minute mile, or ask your body to try do this, say run a certain set of something and it can do it. And it's like, God, not like, think of the control you have there. You might look better than a lot of people or feel a lot healthier. Second thing is like, you know, I broke the 4 minute mile, I won national titles, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that forever. But I had as much excitement then trying to hit other things. I just did, we have things called park runs over here. They're like local races. And like I broke my local course's records, you know. So, and that was so exciting. I was like running the course the week before, you know, to see it. And I ran like 15 minutes, 5 seconds on that course, you know, and I've ran 13 something for 5K. But it was still really exciting. Or I'm doing like more local road races, or, you know, there might be a thing of not checking the times, but thinking, all right, there might be a local race there that I can be competitive in, or I can be the first over 55 in that, or, you know, just like readjusting. I like having goals, and the goal doesn't always have to be, I have to beat the time I did 5 years ago or 3 years ago. The goal could now be, I want to be the first over 50 here. I want to just, you know, do this race, or, you know, compete at this level. I don't know if that makes sense, but
it does. And I think it's a challenge for a lot of people who enter the sport. And like you said, you know, kind of the thin end of the wedge, in that when you're new, or when you're young or when you're old, but when you're new, you can see, it feels like you're basically getting faster every day. Like I remember, yeah. So I didn't start running until I was 29. And I remember that first year, it was every single time I went out to do a basic workout, I'd set a new mile PR, new 5K PR. Yeah, every race I ran was like 10 minutes off, 15 minutes off my time. Like, this is brilliant. I love this. And then it was like, oh, but like you said, it doesn't last forever. But the same thing is that expecting that to continue for the rest of our career, like that's just not realistic too, because at some point you'll have kind of done all of the regular things. You'll have run a 5K, you'll have run a 10K, you'll run a half marathon, you'll run a marathon, maybe you've run a trail race, maybe you've run an 8K or a 4K or whatever, drop down to the mile. But there are so many different ways to challenge yourself that don't solely rely on, can I run this specific distance faster than I did last time?
Yeah, and as you said, just even enjoying the race, kind of like just being competitive in a race, whether you're coming first or 50th, like there's always like a good challenge of, God, that was just great to get out and try my best there. Irrespective of the time, you know, courses are different. Like a lot of things have to go right. Once you get down to it, like I would say at least every second race for me, you know, it's not going to go like, you know, if I'm trying to win, it's like, I'm not going to win, or this or that can happen. So it's just knowing that and just enjoying the process anyway.
I love they come across my social media feeds every now and then, the videos of, you know, the 90 plus 100 meter sprints, you know, when you're watching, you know, like runners compete on the world stage, 105, you know, and they're running a 35 second 100 meter, but oh my God, they're 105, like this is incredible, you know, crazy. Nobody would ever say to them, like, I don't know, you're not running as fast as you used to.
Yeah, exactly. God, when you were 60, you could do that in 11. Yeah. You know, like, or 12, it's like, you know, it's like, it's just amazing. And I think, as you said, we don't have that perspective, you know, because it's a sad thing about running where you know what you've done in the past, or you can see people winning, and it's like we were saying that even for us, it can be kind of very elitist a little bit, where, you know, we don't all just go into perspective of like, no, like being 50 in this race is like, you've done a really good time. If we actually, like my dad used to say this a lot, where I come home and say I've come, like, it'd be the All-Ireland Championships, and I've come like 12th or 15th, or I might have come 8th or 6th or wherever, and dad would be like, how many was in the race? And I'd be like, Dad, okay, like say there was like 200. I was like, maybe 200. Oh, right, yeah, that's good. I was like, Dad, if there was 5.5 million, it doesn't matter. The rest of the guys aren't beating us. Like, so how many's in the race is, we could put the rest of Ireland in there. There's no one going to beat us. So it doesn't matter who's in it, you know. And I think because the rest of the population aren't there, you aren't seeing how much you're beating, say, your normal 50-year-old body. You're only seeing the other really fit 50-year-olds. And it's always just to keep that in perspective.
Yeah, it's a self-selecting crowd. And then you also, I think this is also the thing to remember too, is that again, as we age, you know, you might be competing against people who are one, genetically gifted, who have been performing at a very high level for decades, who, you know, we all have different levels of natural talent and different lengths of time which we'd fostered that talent, you know. And so it's hard, again, where it's like, well, who do you compare yourself to? If you can't compare yourself to other people and you can't compare yourself to your past self, who you compare yourself to? And it's like, well, you don't have to compare yourself to anybody. You can just go out and just have a day. And
yeah, did you try your hardest? Your day.
Yeah.
Are you happy with your prep? And every runner tries their hardest. Even if you feel like you give up, it's like you probably actually pushed yourself too hard. And it's like just accepting that's how the race went, or it's like, it's exciting trying to beat my best.
All right. So as we wrap up here, thinking about how we can stay competitive as runners as we age. So let's recap and say the rest and recovery becomes even more important. And I want you to say it again, because I think people really need to hear this. You need to probably take at least one rest day per week. And no, a rest day does not mean a day that you strength train. That's a strength training day. A rest day does not mean a day where you go on a hike. That's a cross training day. Like, it's very hard for people to understand that you do need rest in order to get better.
I think the key things, if you broke it down, is you need to be taking one rest day. Two hard workouts in the week is maximum. Do the workouts mainly on like time and effort, like heart rate, rather than set distances. And then include some kind of like strength training, Pilates or yoga in the week to restore your body. And if you do those things, you're going to do a lot better.
I mean, that's great advice, I think, for anybody of any age, but especially as we age up into new groups.
Yeah.
I love it. Awesome. Well, Owen, thank you for being here today. This is a wonderful conversation. It's always fascinating for me to hear from runners who have run at the top of their field and have you just remind us that we're all human at the end of the day, no matter how fast you can run. But if people are interested in learning more about your work or perhaps working with you, tell us about what you offer.
Yeah, so main thing is I have a sports Pilates session, so you can get a free trial of that at Everard, Everard, Pilates, Pilates.com. And you'll just see on the top right hand corner, free trial. Just check that out. If people want to have a free book called Get to the Line in the Best Shape Possible, and you can get that at EverardPilates.com/book.
Easy enough. And those links are going to be below in the show notes, so you can check that out. I know we love freebies around here. Owen, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate our conversation.
Elizabeth, I really enjoyed that. Thanks so much.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, you can always find and follow me on Instagram at Running Explained. And if you're looking for a coach or a training plan, check me out. Visit my website, runningexplained.co. That's runningexplained.co. See you next time.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you have regarding a medical condition.